Dear Manti, sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, we are going to start the first question and answer session. Being today is the first day, I'll give a just brief introduction about the nature of our discussion. We are going to discuss about the questions pertaining to our precepts, the moral conduct, question pertaining to our meditation instructions, and whenever you practice your meditation questions. And if at all some more question pertaining to the talk that I have given. So besides that, we are not usually take theoretical question as such. Whatever it may be, if it is relevant to our practice or relevant to our spiritual living, then it is worth taking to the discussion. So other questions, theory for the sake of theory, we are not touching in the discussion. So there are two ways one can contribute to this discussion. You can write your question and put into the question box without your name. Or otherwise, if you have enough time left behind, then we can raise the question to the audience also. And we are going to start the session by reading already written questions and then see the remaining time and invite for any question from the audience. To start, I would like to invite Vincent to present the questions already presented in the question box, please.
Dear Bhante, may I have your permission to present the questions? Today we have got only 3 questions today to begin with. If anybody sees any questions left somewhere, please bring them here. Question number 1. Venerable Sir, can we do walking meditation outside?
Yeah, sure. Walking meditation is more invited to do in outside if the weather permits. In the situation where it is impossible, only we use indoor because the outdoor situation, atmosphere is more giving more energy and more down to earth. So it is simple answer is yes.
The next question. Dear Bhante, this morning you mentioned the 5 aspects for restraint, including precepts, listening to Dhamma, etc. The 5th one was not clear. Please explain again.
They are called facilitating. You must know all the 5 in order to straighten your view. The first thing is moral restraint, sila anugahita. The Pali term is anugahita. Sila anugahita means that you are facilitating your spiritual life or the retreat or this endeavorance with your precepts. That means moral restraint. The second thing is you have to listen to the Dhamma while you are practicing. You may be well versed in the Dhamma as such, but while practicing itself, daily Dhamma talks and we are taking time with respect. And the 3rd one is the one we are doing now, that is question and answer session, or we call discussion. And the 3rd one is the samatha anugahita, focusing, concentrating, one-pointedness. So towards that also, you must facilitate. And the 5th one is vipassana anugahita. That means towards the inside knowledge, to see things as they are. I put little bit information to him, the changing nature of the thing, its suffering nature and the non-governability, that is the reality as such. So that is also you must go with prepared mind or vigilant mind, open-minded. That's also considered as the 5th one. vipassana anugrahita, with the help of early 3-4 only, you can go into that. It's the final one, final anugrahita, or way of facilitating your spiritual life.
The last question for today, written question. Dear Bhante, as a beginner meditator, how do I deal with aches in the legs during sitting meditation? Any advice is appreciated. Thank you.
So whenever someone sits without much moving, 15 to 20 minutes time, the pains are coming. So that is natural. Even if you are stand still, even if you are lying down, pains are coming. So whenever the pains are happening, if you know right they are, that means kind of a mindfulness. But when you are looking at a video film or any carom game or any the other serious thing, we don't feel it because our mind is not here. Our mind is engaged in the game so that you don't feel it. So whenever you are paying the attention inwardly, you are bound to see bodily pains, feelings. So that is a positive thing. That means whenever you are feeling some pains in the body, that is an indication mindfulness is intact. The negative side is our mind rejects it, considered as depressed, as considered as a negative thing, as sometimes considered as a distraction for the mindfulness. So whenever the feeling happens, maybe painful feeling, two sides. One thing is physically you are in a discomfort, dis-ease. And the second thing is mentally you are not happy with it, rejecting it, kind of the hatred is there. So therefore, mental rejection is aggravating it. So in sitting meditation, whenever feeling happen, maybe in the lower, your right knee or left knee, you can see mind, consider it as a distraction. And therefore, you always try to hate it and try to instead keep the mind with your primary object. And therefore, there's a tension. There's a frustration. There's a disappointment. Instead, if the pain is more conspicuous, more prominent than your primary object, leave aside the primary object, just be aware the place you feel that pain and the nature of that pain, whether it is like a piercing or burning or twisting or one point or number of points, whether it's moving or stable like, try to see the characteristics of the pain and see your problem is not with the physical pain but the mental pain that you are rejecting. That is what camouflage. Even if you wish to be face to face with the pain, impossible because you have a hatred towards the underlying one. So the day you see it, you can understand why it appears more unpleasant. So first you have to understand natural characteristic of the pain and meanwhile see the underlying current, your reaction to the pain. So instant, one technique I can suggest, for example, if you have pain, for example, in your right knee and it is unbearable, you can see that your mind is pulled into this pain and it has kind of a magnetizing power, even though it is negative, to that pain. And if you can manage and if you can be aware, see the left knee at that time while the right knee is painful. Left knee is very calm and quiet. Only thing is very difficult to pull the mind from the right knee to the left knee and mind is always pull to the torturing part, burning part, unpleasant part, and making complaint. Instead, you can give a chance to see the left knee and it is at peace. So, if you try to see the difference, when the mind given equal chance, mind is naturally going to the painful side. Our mind is naturally sadistic, is searching some complaints. So, you have to understand it and ask the mind to come and wait with the left knee instead. And it is no much of pain. So, this is the way you can trick with. And once, if you can manage to go to the left knee and wait a little and come back, right knee, the existing pain also may be changed. So, there you can understand if you give an equal chance to the mind, mind is naturally going to the more painful situation. So, more and more you practice, you will learn. The mind is naturally go to the most painful thing, but a lot of other neutral or not painful areas are there. Unless otherwise mind is trained, unless otherwise mind is be prepared, you do not know how to make use it. When you are complaining a toothache, only one tooth is painful. There are some 31 left behind. You never know. When you are complaining about a limb, you have four limbs. Others are not. Likewise, when the mind is cheating and pulling you to the torturing thing and burning thing, you must try to give an alternative. And your primary object also an alternative. Like just play with and don't make a hard and fast determination. I am going to be with the pain throughout. Only thing you have to do is be with it one more split second without giving up. Live with one more split second day by day, then you can go into the pain and you can understand the nature of the pain, not at the beginning, at the middle, and then when you advance it like that, one day when you keep on practicing, you can see the cessation part of the pain also. If the pain is painful at the beginning, the cessation part of that very pain is becoming pleasurable. We are going to deal it with in talks yet to come. And it is very interesting to see the cessation. The disappearing part of the pain is just the opposite of the beginning part. We are complaining only by looking at only one beginning side. Then it appears like a question. But if you have to see the beginning, the middle, through the middle to the end, it is not a question. It is an answer for your mindfulness to grow. And therefore, you are supposed to be with the painful pain, painful feeling, one split second before giving up. Likewise, try to increase the association with the pain more and more.
Three more questions have come. Bhante, during the day's first meditation session, before taking 8 precepts, I kept my attention on the breath. After approximately 15 to 20 cycles, the breath disappeared and an amorphous moving red shape appeared. This has occurred in the past during personal meditation sessions. Please help me understand. The mind is naturally attracted to this moving image. What is it? So far, when I lose the image, I have been... Should I ignore it? Focusing the attention on the breath. With reverence, Kenneth D. Abru.
So, whenever you are continue with your primary object, in this case, the breath, 15 to 20 cycles, you can continue. That means you are continuous mindfulness is there. And then there are some other objects like light, lightness, darkness, heaviness, many things can happen. So whatever happens, our mind try to see something as positive and something as negative. So without even going to give a value judgment, try to see the possibility to be with your same old primary object amidst of this all the objects, maybe light color or dark color, heavy or lightness, whatever it may be, how much you can keep the track with the primary object or how much you can keep the track with the mindfulness, then you will understand they appear, whether it is going to be a problem or not, depending on your reaction. So therefore, whatever it may be, see the possibility, so see through it or go through it. That means can still be aware your primary object while it is happening. If the primary object as such, so to say, the breath is not visible, just see while the objects like this thing happen, can you make sure that you are sitting, not walking, not standing still, not lying down. You just try to see the relationship with your posture, and then you can minimize the damage or agitation or turmoil by appearance of these objects. So whatever may be the object, just look into, see through it, and try to go through it and see how much you can keep the relationship with your either posture or with your primary object. Then you are diversifying your mindfulness, how to maintain the mindfulness amidst of all these kind of challenges, all these kind of objects. So more and more you practice, you will be neutral to the what is happening on the way. And you develop kind of a relationship in this troubled situation with the primary object you have already appointed, or relationship with your posture. That is how you are learning multitasking, or not to get entangled with the distractions, but to be with the primary object. But the Burmese master, Venerable Pandita Abhivansa Seyado, he says, if you are sure enough, if you are confident enough, if you have enough experience, even if you are looking at these distractions, no problem. You are not, if you are confident enough, not necessary to come back and recheck with your primary object. You can just let the secondary objects to be there. You are sure they are secondary objects. As far as you know, they are secondary objects. Let them play. If you have any doubt, if you have any lack of confidence only, you have to come back and verify, come back and see the relationship with the primary object or the sitting posture. The second part that I explained may be too much for a beginner. But for a person who is advanced with this mindfulness, let the secondary object come and play. Don't worry. Don't pull the mind to the primary object, as far as you have confidence. So this is how you nullify the distractions from the secondary objects.
Most Venerable Bhante, welcome back to New York. Last year, after your detailed instruction on mindfulness of feeling, as I returned home and continued to practice, I was able to become less attached to some feelings, simply because they had lost their charm. But more importantly, I have been able to turn away and relinquish a few of the objects that cause these feelings. They too have lost their charm. Is this the object of mindfulness, or is it a byproduct of practicing mindfulness? I should mention that relinquishing things that cause both pleasant and unpleasant feelings has brought an equal measure of peace. Thank you.
So the getting rid of these unwanted things is something you do, or it is happening on your way, it's an open question. You keep in your bag, traveling bag, thinking they are useful when you are specifically traveling. We are travelers in this sansaric journey. So whenever you find these things are not in use or no any utility value, they just drop off. So at the beginning, we feel we do it. But later, you will see as far as you keep on mindful, the mindfulness itself is shedding off. It is like reptiles shedding off their own worn-out skin. They never take it back. And the Sutta Nipata, the very first discourse, shedding off of the worn-out skin, it is a kind of a sign of growth. When the reptile is growing, the old skin worn out and the new skin happen. And again, that will be replaced by a still inner skin. Likewise, the shedding off is happening. At the beginning, you claim, this is, I did it. But later, you see that is the evolution. That's a part and partial. So only you are aware. To be aware, you must understand that on theoretical basis. And then you have to understand to gain some new thing. You have to give up all things. Or otherwise, we can put it. Giving up all things means holding into new things. This is the way it is happening. It is not in absolute terms. It is always happening in a relative terms. So more and more you become a seasoned traveler, less and less become your bag. Likewise, in the day-to-day activities and in the meditation also, the life becomes somewhat lighter because you need not to have so much of things because no utility value. In the consumerized society, in the society with the materialism, whether it is in the utility or not, you hold it, you accumulate them. Ultimately, the maintenance is a hell of a problem. But when you become more realistic, down to earth, mindful, you keep only for the utility value. So therefore, naturally, it will take its own momentum as far as you know the meaning of utility value. So this is a good thing. What I am explaining is whether it is something you do or it is happening to you is part yet. You to understand, due to lack of experience only, we interpret in different ways. This is always happening, the shedding off of our worn-out skin. That's a good, clear sign of progress.
Dear Bhante, what happens when your mind falls asleep?
One thing, if sitting meditation is more towards the slimy mind, sloth and torpor, because you do nothing, just observe. You observe also very neutral objects, so mind never get titillated, mind never get frills and thrills. So therefore, sleepiness can happen. But compared to that, walking is somewhat active, so it appears like as an answer to this slimy mind, sloth and torpor. But when you are practicing walking meditation, maybe beyond 35-40 minutes, sometimes you feel sleepiness while walking also. And there you have to understand, sometimes maybe understandable, when and where the mind is full of desire and hatred, its mind is upright. When the desire and hatred reduces, you become slimy, mind becomes sleepy. So you have to understand this sleepiness happened due to lack of extreme desire or extreme hatred or due to any physical requirements. So when and where you do in city meditation itself, more you keep the track with your primary object, more it becomes bored. More it become monotonous. And if you are not go with preparedness, that monotony and the repetitive application lead to very slimy, very disinterest, very lack of dynamism, depth of action, go into this slimy mind. And if you go prepared, there you have kind of a chance. So when and where your mind is face-to-face with the primary object and you see it is continuous, be prepared for this sleepiness and the slimy mind. There you can understand that preparedness give a kind of a catalytic effect to go deep into the sleepiness. But there you go with vigilance, you go with diligence, and you can understand that calming down is basically due to lack of extreme desire or extreme hatred. It is because of your meditation. So if you are not going prepared, you may miss the bus. If you go prepared, you can go into very deep situation in the mind where no much of agitation of the desire and the hatred, and the calming down happened. That calming down mind read as sleepiness, unless otherwise you are a instructed person or you go prepared. So whenever you learn mindfulness with the diligence, harmonizing sati and apamada, apamada is helping you to understand this slimy mind, or whether it is associated with the defilement or dissociate with the defilements. If it is dissociated with the defilement, it indicates a progress in your meditation. If it is associated with the defilement, you have to find answers and see remedies. So therefore, your report must be informative, whether it is happening while your association with the primary object, or is it due to too much of wandering mind and lack of mindfulness. That part of information is not in the report. If it is available, we can still go further into the discussion. But when you are reporting next time, please see how much you are related with the primary object while this is happening. Okay?
Yes.
Already 6 questions, 30 yes. minutes left.
Maybe there. Yeah.
There are any clarification necessary or any other more information to put into the discussion, you all are welcome.
I read that the Buddha and his past disciples had made aspirations in previous lives. Are there any role of aspirations in meditation practice and walking practice? Does it play any sort of role, or like a motivating role or something?
So whenever you are talking about the momentum, gathering the momentum, the starting power is very, very important. So they have to gather the momentum, they should have a process accelerating slowly, slowly. The accelerated one behave completely different from the gathering time. So this one also the same. Any pianist or any person playing musical instruments, so much of training at the beginning. Then only they can go to the orchestra and harmonize with the others. So therefore everything on the earth is happening in the gradual basis. So only problem is we don't know how much we have gathered the momentum. There's no way. And that is also will be verified when you are practicing. Day by day, if you are progressing, that indicates you are started with a very good starting balance. And the things are getting messed up and disturbed. That means you don't have much of past experience. That we cannot measure, but we have to take it in the positive way. Becoming a human itself is a game, according to the teaching of the Buddha. So if you are putting it in the proper way, you accumulate more and more of the positive vibrations. And mindfulness is a neutral kind of thing. If you can maintain mindfulness today more than yesterday, that indicates you have past merits. You have past paramis. Otherwise, unless otherwise you practice, very difficult to say, otherwise we can do guessworks. So practitioner, by practicing only understand whether I have past accumulated things. Of course we have bad things, accumulated bad things. So that is why we find difficult to get into this practice and continue with. But even if it is gaining, if it is gathering the momentum in a very tiny way, you must appreciate that tiny little thing. It is because due to your past this thing. So when we are dealing with children, we give least amount of information. We said them, just sit. Don't do anything and see what is happening. We are not asking to do, apply mind to this so that. Just sit. Be aware that you are sitting. And then, if possible, please relate it. Please discuss it with others. So one girl, maybe in the kindergarten level, in the classroom, the teacher mentioned that you just sit and see what is happening. And she told, there is nothing. I see nothing. Teacher was not happy. Because other children says, I feel the heaviness, I feel the breath and this and that. And then teacher insisted, that girl, try to see something, because they are doing practicing daily. And one day she told, I feel the breath. And the teacher was very happy. Oh, you got the line and please carry on. Few days time, that girl mentioned that breath ceases to exist. And then teacher asks, what do you see? Nothing. And then they say, that is very good because you see the breath and reduces, ceases to nothing. That girl mentioned, that is at the starting point. I told you, but you are not happy. And after seeing the breath and disappearing, now you are facing me. But both are the same. Elders can't understand it. Young children, easily they understand, they start with nothing. We are the people introducing something and ask them to get it ceases off. And it's still the same. So, one of the meditation masters, he told, if the child is so bright, child is so articulated, if the teacher is going to miss that child, what a cry. So, you must have fair understanding. Children and people living in the simple life, they are very simple people. And introducing so much of difficult techniques, formulas and everything, we mess them up. So you have to understand when you sit calm and be aware of what is happening. Only thing is how much you can relate it, how much you can report it, how much you can give your report, how much it is true to type. So therefore, more and more I am inclined to say is our whole business is nothing but communication. We can't communicate. We can't tell what we see. We can't tell what we hear. We always exaggerate. Then the communication upset. So in this question also, whenever you sit, you feel like sitting, and tomorrow still further, and continue with that, that indicates you have past merits. You must be happy, because it is gathering in the quantity and quality-wise. So it is a long-term business. Number of times you have to apply your mind to the present moment and see if it is possible. I would say you have very good positive balance from the last life.
So one of the instructions, the main instruction seems to be to just to observe. How is that related to developing good qualities and diminishing bad qualities of mind?
When we are attending school at the grade 3 or 4, there was one small lesson. Whenever you expose any dirty thing or any infected thing into the sunlight, all pathogenic germs will die, only saprophytic germs will remain, and thing will be decomposed just by exposing to sunlight. Sunlight is the cheapest, most common disinfect. So the Buddha mentioned, Vibhuto bhikkave viro tathagata pavedita tathagata sa vedita dhammo vibhuto viro chatina patichanu. Whenever you expose, it will be brighter. If you close, a fermentation can happen. A bad gas can occur. So exposure to sunlight is almost like exposure to mindfulness. Under the light of mindfulness, nothing bad can happen. Always. So mindfulness is straightforward. But directly exposing, without hiding, without giving your commentaries. So that is the way the communication happens. So even if you are talking openly, that is called free association, counseling, that's it. So this is what Western psychology prescribe, is to have a free association, that is a catharsis. All the bad thing will go out, good thing will come. So therefore you have to agree professionally, you are not divulging information, just tell, just believe other heart, just tell it. So in mindfulness, you are the patient, you are the psychiatrist, mindfulness is the medicine. So cheap, under your very nose, then and there. But how much that mindfulness can use as a therapeutic way, healing way, or what is the value of preventative mindfulness? Once you become a psychopath or psychiatric patient, very difficult for you to buy your own counseling. Beforehand, you must have already developed mindfulness. That is, I call the preventive kind of mindfulness. Then, even if you get kind of a depression or kind of thing, you can counsel yourself and then can be recycled. So therefore, bad enough, only the preventive, therapeutic and healing mindfulness came to the West. So now it is misused. Now it is paralyzed. But instead, if we can introduce therapeutic, that is, even the healthy people do mindfulness for the future benefits, that will not be much attractive than therapeutic. You can't make a commodity out of the preventive kind of mindfulness, only therapy. So one has to understand it. In the medical science also the same thing happened. Prevention is better than cure, but the preventative medicine, health medicine and the family medicine go on now. Now only therapeutic coming. It is becoming a commodity. Mind made, the people make money out of that. And then the noble nature of the medicine is gone. Exactly in the mindfulness. So we practice before we fall into sick, before we fall into any kind of a depression, we practice mindfulness. Because we know our life is so complicated that any time we can get a depression or we can get a panic kind of thing. By that time, if we have already developed mindfulness, you are better off. So, you have to, preparedness. And that is what you are being taught in scouting. Be prepared. And the medical science also, you have to say prevention is better than cure. So you can't make it society at large, but you yourself can understand and promote it. Then you are better off.
Good afternoon. You spoke about right livelihood briefly. Will you be speaking more about that as the week goes on? Because I have found that there's a wall that one hits sometimes between being mindful and the right life. It becomes a negative feedback where you would like to stop, but the world keeps going, of course. Thank you.
So you can forget about mindfulness and just live. Easily. Let's say it's happening. Once the mindfulness is introduced, yeah, that software, once you put into your computer, and it's forking finger to each and every issue in your life, Even if you do little mindful, try to be mindful, even 5 minutes, we'll sit and come here and be mindful. But ultimately, mindfulness is working in such a way, it's addressing to each and every nook and corner. So therefore, it is, even though start mindfulness in the reductionist way, ultimately it becomes a system approach. So therefore, livelihood, the Buddha mentioned, there's a time period on the earth where the teaching is available. Many of the dark time, the teaching is not available. At that time, even if you feel better to be mindful and live a life, wholesome life, you are nowhere. You can't think about it, you can't comprehend it. But nowadays, it is available. And the simple answer is becoming a monk. You're already bald-headed. It's a very simple thing.
Renunciation.
Yeah, so...
So I'm sorry, I said, so either become a renunciate,
yeah,
or not.
No, I am telling you, what's one of the epithet, one of the example you can give. And the irony is most of the renounced monks are not meditating. I am coming from the forest tradition. They are not live up to the monkhood. And then it's another question. That is not the question I wanted to raise. What I'm telling is the utility value and luxury value. The utility value is the one what you call the correct livelihood. The animals in the forest tradition, they kill whenever they feel hungry. They are not killing other animals for the sports. They are not so naughty. So likewise, we, when we become civilized, we accumulate thinking, future. The thinking, future and accumulation is the core teaching of politics. Develop kind of uncertainty and you feel like accumulating, and that is politics. So we all are politicians in that sense. So you have to understand the utility value and the consumerization of the luxury. And the person who do not know the utility limit and the luxury limit, we call the commoner, we call putujana, according to Buddhist teaching. Whenever you go up to the utility value, you're about to thread past to the luxury and you feel, come back to, utility value is called Aryans, noble people. You can thread past. And when you are threading, when you are crossing from the utility to luxury, if you are not sensitive, you are very callous, you are not diligent, you are not vigilant. This is nature. So to be vigilant and diligent when you are thread passing is what we are developing through mindfulness. So when we are associating some other people, how much we are disturbing other psychology. Because you and the psychology is the same. And when we are using something, you have to understand the utility value. And there, you respect other beings, fellow meditators and fellow beings in the society in the equal way. They also have their own rights. I also have, I am very smart, I am very creative, I am productive, but I am not going to make use it to crush other people, exploit other people. It is the human, that's the highest culture. Imagine when you are giving something to someone, thinking about the other's need. You feel the other person is in need and you have something and you politely go and give. And you can see random act of kindness, so much of pressure. If you go to the computer and put random act of kindness, there's another website telling each day you have to do 1 or 2 random acts. Even the scouting, as Baden-Powell indicated, do at least one, physically, verbally, and mentally. And there you feel share with others. So therefore, it appears like a livelihood, appears like a personal issue, but you can't do it without the partner, the rest of the world. So that develops loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and all the kind of thing. So whenever you understand, then my requirements and my fellow beings' requirements are exactly the same. So think from the other's point of view, very easy. So this is a political distinction. But you yourself can have your own values, not to exploit others, go for utility, and don't live in the future fear. So that is the way you become a slave. That's the way you become a second-hand person. Others will create fear in order to control you. And you must understand, nothing to worry. No one can give the shelter for the others. Even the materiality can't give it. Only your contentment. So therefore, living in a society like here, and I, wherever I go, I tell, when I come to Chuanjing, they give food, they give shelter, they give everything free. It's in America. It's a part and parcel of America. Everything given free. So it's possible. It is possible. So we went to Slovakia, and I discussed with that particular the meditation the manager. He told, we charge a little sum from the each and every meditator, but the founder member, the person who started, is going to give the balance of the bill, everything. But he charged a fair amount from the each and every, so therefore nothing to worry about there. We are not depending completely upon the money we gain from the meditators, but he is giving. So this kind of people available. So we must, in the livelihood, the best example is the Buddha. Best livelihood is beggar. Begging, depending on, you go with your bowl. So Venerable Jnana Veera used to say, the bowl leaves my account balance, so I show it to other people. So if they wish, they will put something. And he take the bowl and stand near the bus halting place. Someone will come and ask, Mante, where I wish to go? I wish to go to Kalam. Then he will buy a ticket and put into the bowl. So he travels. So and he is writing. He is writing in such a proud way. It is possible. And it was earlier in India, it was possible. But now, little difficult. But if you go with the bowl in Singapore or in America, you will get put into jail. Yeah. You may put, I am a homeless or something like that. Then there may be some kind of a sympathy. But if you go with the begging bowl, not possible. So this is the way society at large, but wherever it may be up to utility value, and don't exploit others, don't think smart than the others, and share with others, daily perform at least one random act of kindness, then slowly, slowly you will be a human.
Bhante, so referring back to a couple of questions that I've already asked, one was, you know, when you feel pain, that becoming the primary object, dropping the breath and going to the pain. And the other one, you know, when you see an image or something that's attractive and your mind gravitates towards that, is it okay to drop the breath and completely delve right into that and stay with that?
That is why with care or with due care, you have to understand if you are with full confidence about your practice, whether it is gone to a pain or light or with the primary object, exactly the same. But if you have not enough confidence, better to go back, confine to your primary object in order to verify that I am mindful. But when you are advancing one day, you have to see the primary object also your mind made. Pain also mind-made, light also mind-made, at that time you must be choicelessly be aware. I know what I am telling is something complicated.
Yes, yeah.
So I am repeating.
Yes, please, thank you.
So when a beginner advancing with the primary object, positive, negative signs may appear, light, pain, anything. It never happen if that particular person is with doubt, perplexity. Please come back to primary object. That is to verify I am mindful, primary object is at my eye shot. It's a close vicinity. Then you feel homely and you feel confident. And again, when you are practicing, again, some kind of other images can happen. Later, when you develop the confidence about your mindfulness, you may let the mind to run to the pain, run to the light, anything, but you know your primary object is at your fingertip. Anytime you can go and verify, let the mind to play little hell, play little mischief. And it go there and ultimately it again come back to your primary object naturally. Likewise, you develop the confidence about mindfulness. At the beginning, you do it with the verification with the primary object again and again. Later, you find that verification is costly. It is very disturbing. It is time-wasting. Later, you let alone. Let things happen. And there you will understand primary object also your image, your mind construction. Pain also a construction of your mind. The image also construction. You are in a dream. All are dreams. So why worry? This is the advanced stage. So keeping that in mind, at the beginning, bring your attention as much as possible to the primary object to get rid of perplexity, get rid of lack of confidence.
But can I ask a follow-up question? So if the mind seems to be calmer when it's focused on the secondary object, and you feel pretty confident about it, stay with that? Would that be...
And instead of karma, you may say, mind is not agitated by the secondary object.
Yes.
That is your maturity. That your mindfulness is now it is going into the deep water than your nose level. When you are going into the deep water, up to the nose level, you feel confidence.
Mm.
And when you go deeper into that, you get sink down. But anyway, you know how to come up, then whatever the depth, no problem. And so likewise, in a swimming pool, you go up to the nose level with the assistance of parents and the swimmer and the lifeguard and everything. But as far as you know, go a little deeper and even if you go below this thing and if you know how to come up, then whatever the depth, no problem. So there you lose the value of the correct and wrong. Lose the value of ethics and no ethics. And till that, you are maintaining ethics, maintaining good and bad, big and the large, gain and the loss. But beyond that level, you experiment it, you find good and the bad can make no much of a difference because my mindfulness is very strong. So till that next day also, when you start as a beginner, you have the early part, you have the good and the bad, primary object, other objects, defilements and defilement, everything. But daily, if you are a successful yogi, daily you go beyond that level when things are things. You are the person give values. You are the person give attribution, perception. Then onward you are tensed. So to lose, to go beyond the perception, one day you must be prepared to let the mind to wander away from the primary object, but still no perplexity, no doubts. Let the mind to run kites, no problem. Okay, now we are nearing the time. If there are no other further questions, we'll sum up the question and answer session, first one. And we are going to have 1 hour of walking meditation. Thank you very much for the participation. Sadhu,
sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu.